Welcome again, all our viewers and listeners. Today, we have a special guest, David Tiang.
Hello, everyone. David Tiang is here.
So, Lyra, you know with David what we're going to talk about, right?
Yes, of course. Everything politics.
Yeah, so David, I know you have been busy with your work and also your own social media content, but also you have been up to different shows and radio stations. Maybe tell us a little bit about what you have been doing.
Oh, this few months I'm being invited to the FM, but mostly in Mandarin, to share about my talks of like state election, like nation building, our national identity kind of stuff. Like I'm more keen to talk about the green wave, like Sabah, Sarawak, BS, Semenanjung kind of things. Last week, I attend a Chinese YouTube show talking about West Malaysian vs East Malaysian. It's very interesting, but it's not that intense because most of us are kind of we live in Semenanjung for a while, so we know what is happening on the ground. So I want to see the very Sarawakian guy vs very Semenanjung guy, but we didn't see it happen. Yeah,
I guess, we're just talking earlier on, right? I mean, all three of us actually are originally from Sarawak. Lyra, myself, of course, have been here for more than 10 years already.
Yeah.
But even when you are here, I guess you still retain, you know, that identity. and of course, David, you've been here for less than 2 years. But you mentioned that very often they invited you because of your Sarawak East Malaysia perspective, right?
One of the thing is, and also my frequent appearance on social media of myself that talking about the politics thing.
But you mentioned one difference that you discover, you know, in terms of the messaging and the focus. Maybe you'd like to share?
In terms of Sarawakians living in Semenanjung, I found a very big difference before and after I came to Semenanjung. So before I came to Semenanjung, I'm a very kind of typical Sarawakian nationalist that I feel like we are betrayed by our nation forefathers. They betrayed us. They sell us to the Semenanjung, to Putrajaya, to KL. Cannot. And we have to take back all our rights, our autonomies, or else, or we can shout independence, or we might as well declare independence. But after I came to Semenanjung, actually not really I came to Semenanjung. Before I came to Semenanjung, I do read some news, some articles, and interact with my friends that it's not that intense. We have to declare Sarawak independence for now, and we declare independence tomorrow kind of stuff. But I just feel like self-pity. I am very pity of our fellow Sarawakians and Sabahans. But after I came to Semenanjung, I feel like, they still have some misunderstood because South China Sea is so big, so it separates us geographically. But I also feel like, they are talking about the identity politics, but as well as they also talk about the nation building, talk about economic, how do we enlarge the economic size. I don't really hear this kind of discussion in Sarawak. Yes, there are some people talking about that, but they are like, oh, the Sarawakian nationalism is more important because we are neutral and whatever. So make me think about if we are still poor, is discussing or highlighting the Sarawak identity important? It's like important then we earn more money.
Yep.
Like our basic salary in Sarawak, I just heard the news that master degree get a 1,008 monthly salary. Yep. I'm like, excuse me? The basic salary is 50, 100. It's like 1.5K, and master degree graduate is 1.8K. Unbelievable in Sarawak, happening in Sarawak. How come we still talk more about the national identity more than the economy, more than the nation building for Sarawakian in Sarawak itself? So,
hearing you just kind of reminded me of some of the discussion, you know, Lyra, we had about, you know, wanting independence and having self-determination really are two very separate things. You know, we can be an independent nation, but maybe you're still ruled by people. You don't have the ability to choose for yourself.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing. And, I think your commentary on the bread and butter issue is so accurate because that seems to be the issue everyone is talking about.
Yeah.
Our currency is getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, just the other day, I just did a transaction. One USD is almost 4.7. So, I mean, not even in the 96, 97 economic crisis, we have seen this, right? But anyway, we sort of pivot into what we wanted to talk about, right?
Yeah.
Now, Lara, what's the article that you have been finding? Maybe you can just read the article and we can put it out for everyone to reference, and they'll become the anchor for today's discussion.
Yeah,
we always like Mr. KJ. So again, today we are referencing him. Mm-hmm. So he talked about this in Malaysia Kini article, that tsunami of discontent. So in other words, tsunami of besongness. So it's not really the green wave that is coming. So I thought there is really some truth in what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And basically like what you were alluding earlier on, that it's really the bread and butter issues that are really, really affecting the people, especially after the lockdown, the massive lockdown. And I think also like what PH is promoting earlier on, especially during the sentiment, the emotions that they arouse people into. Basically, not just that we want to end corruption, but one key message that Pakatan Harapang was promoting is the fact that the effectiveness of our Prime Minister himself, as the former Finance Minister. And now he's also the one that is holding the portfolio of Ministry of Finance. But we are really seeing that hardship is really coming upon the people.
So after 6 months, okay, before we move on, did the unity government overpromise and underdeliver? Just very quick reaction first.
Nope, really. Because during the process of negotiation to form the government, I don't think they really come out have a very clear message of to the Malaysian that
to deal with the economy.
This is how we will deal with the economy.
Because of the competing ideology and background. Yeah. Okay.
If you want to comment about the coalition themselves, Pakatan Harapan, Barisan Nasional, Perikatan Nasional, yes, they have separate manifesto.
Correct.
Yeah.
Lara, what's your take?
Well, actually, I don't think that they overpromised. But I did think that they stayed true somewhat, because earlier on, it was in the context of should the people give them the mandate. But the thing is, there wasn't enough mandate. I think that's the reality that we have to take it in. But the thing is, if they were given the mandate by the people, I think they would have been able to do much greater job, maybe even more daring to propose some economic reform. So I think in some way the budget was a bit progressive, but it's not, I guess it's not sufficient enough. So it's really, I think there's a lot of hands that were tied in terms of because of the coalition, because of the unity government, and they were not able to really propose something for the fear of just arousing the people. And because if we look at the stats for the state election, what if the PH voters are not really coming out to vote? That will really affect their credibility.
Yeah.
So we did, I mean, even the last few weeks and few months, we kind of talk about, I mean, the whole background with the unity government is the rise of the green wave. And that's always at the back of their mind. And I think it's fair to say that Prime Minister have taken certain policy initiative to counter the green wave, maybe, you know, maybe not to say eradicate, but kind of, you know, say we're going to make sure that the whole issue with race, religion, royalty not going to go crazy. And I think he did a bit of that. But now people are saying, let me just quote what KJ said, okay, from the article. He said, since Anwar Ibrahim took power, there has been a clear lack of economic direction, continual depreciation of ringgit and further erosion of people's purchasing power due to a prolonged cost of living crisis. Now, I stop here because both of you already mentioned, look, we don't have a clear mandate. Time is quite short. But I want to just talk a little bit about the whole Perikatan Nasional, because now, of course, we talk about Perikatan Nasional today, Bersatu and PAS, but this is not the first reiteration of Perikatan Nasional. Just now we had to do a bit of search, right? When the first Pakatan federal government fell, Muhyiddin Yassin called his government Perikatan. And I think in our show, we kind of loosely reference it to PN1, right? So there was Bersatu, UMNO, GPS, PAS, plus traitors. Okay. Then, of course, he brought in Zafru and things like that. Then that government fell. Sabri became prime minister with a basically similar collision and Zafru remains the economist. Now, I want to go back here because it seems like KJ is trying to say it's all the unity's government fault, but I have no role to play, and he was a cabinet minister. So what do you all think? Maybe let's just respond to the Prekata National History first. I mean, how much responsibility, if any, should they be having? Maybe we start with you first, Lyra. I know we are not like trying to go back and
fighting
be so calculative. The saying, right, in retrospect, everyone is wise, right? So we're not trying to be sarcastic like that, but surely you must take some responsibility also.
Mm. Yeah, of course. I mean, I like what earlier on, because before this whole recording starts, you were just talking about how, because basically we still have UMNO, because we still have the establishment that is helping them. But what makes them very, very different now is that they don't have the establishment. Yeah, maybe you have one superstar. But the thing is, you have to understand, the KJ, superstar, yeah, the superstar was also in the PN. I mean, so what makes your strategy different then? I mean, because this whole prolonged crisis, if we really want to be so calculative, we should really hold the whole PN government accountable to it, because you started this whole thing. You got the whole nation into emergency crisis, and then because of that, it took us so long to really just have to like crawl out of this whole economic crisis. So I think it's really, if we look at the state election, the states that were really controlled by this current coalition, PN, especially PAS, those PAS rule states, they are not really doing very, very well at all. So I think it's not fair at all to say that PH, you didn't do well. It's almost like you are suddenly increasing the yardstick to like a higher benchmark, that sort of thing. So I felt like maybe it's a bit biased, but I think if given the history, like what you were saying, the retrospective sort of perspective, we would see that they are not really doing a very good stewarding of the finance, especially.
Now, David, I want to come back to you because you say something really, really interesting, which Lyra already kind of alluded, which is the Prekata National 1 and 2 both have UMNO. Now, we are not singing the praises of UMNO here, but the fact remains that they have been ruling the country for 60 years. Almost the entire, you know, civil structure, you can say police, military, judiciary, you call it elite, you know, we can call it deep state or whatever, basically those in the background or foreground, regardless, they basically run the country and they are not going away anytime soon. And I mean, if we just look at history, you know, every time you try to do something very drastic, you try to remove it out of the face of the earth, there's a vacuum and you're not going to be sure whether the vacuum will be filled with goodness or badness. But anyway, come back to the current Prekata National, which is PAS, Bersatu, the nine line, you know, your Gerakan and things like that, totally irrelevant. So without UMNO, so are we saying that because of that, maybe the governance is worse?
I guess it's like, you know,
the economic chops, you know, we call it chops, you know, the economic credential.
Okay, we talk about this way. Let's talk about DAP. During 2008, DAP suddenly get the power in Selangor and Penang and even Perak. Many people accuse them, you have no experience in governance, and they are, it is true also.
At that time.
That they don't know how the public servants work, public system, they don't know what is establishment, they don't know how public servant has so much power that even you are CM or PM, whatever, you can do a very little thing only. So I think Bersatu and PAS is now currently face the same crisis. It's like, let's say we compare PN and PH Plus, PH Plus PN. We have to choose a bunch of people, a bunch of leaders that they can lead the country.
Yep.
So if we look at PH and BN right now, who the people they have? Anwar Ibrahim, got experience, financial minister, blah, 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 DAP, a bunch of guys, PK, a bunch of guys, UMNO, a bunch of guys.
It's really a state level, right?
State level and also federal level. But let's look at PAS and Bersatu. Yes, there are some very elite people in PAS in Terengganu and Kelantan. Terengganu PM, CM, I think, is a very very talented astronomy, PhD.
Mm.
But out of them, like Wang Faizal, Wang Saifu, Muhyiddin Hamza, and I cannot call some name already.
Mm.
So are we really want to put our trust in this coalition to rule our nation?
Mm-hmm.
Because our nation not only have Kelantan, Terengganu, we still have Penang, have Klang Valley.
Yep.
Want to attract more as much as FDI as possible.
Yep.
Like semiconductor, like diplomatic kind of stuff. You cannot simply shout the race and religion. You cannot easily play the race and religion card. Or else Malaysia will corrupt in your hand, and it's not good to see also for you. You might collapse in the next election. So by this kind of comparing, back to your questions, that UMNO actually play some roles in the government because they are most experienced and they are one of the traditional Malay-centric and Malay nationalism kind of party. So I can say if you want to avoid nation building with UMNO in a good way or bad way, have to be very careful because we are not get used to it. We are not we didn't have an experience that Malaysia without UMNO.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the future, I don't know. But for currently, we have to know UMNO as well as possible.
One of the hypotheses after the last general elections, was that UMNO has been rejected. But of course, we know, you know, a party so established for so long, you're not going to die just so quickly. And I guess the state election is going to give them an opportunity to demonstrate whether they can still rise. Because I think ultimately at the end of the day, like what we discussed earlier on, we want competition, right?
Mm.
We don't want, like one of the frustration with the unity government is like there's no competition, you know, and otherwise I try to recruit everyone. Single one. Where's the fun, right? And so, but of course it's like, okay, I mean, I think in the last episode we were saying, you know, should UMNO rise again? Not an easy thing to answer. But coming, I mean, since we're discussing this, I think this leads us straight to the next issue, which is the strategy. Because we go back to the article again, what it says, tsunami of discontent. And David, you were saying that you feel there might be a shifting in the strategy from Perikatan, right? Moving away from race, religion, and royalty. And now we were saying earlier on, you know, based on his entire statement, it seems like KJ wants to remain relevant and he sort of throw his lot with Perikatan. He said, I'm not joining officially, but I'm the advisor. I mean, it's like, you're already saying you are with Perikatan. And is this a Perikatan sanctioned message to tell everyone, especially Selangor and Penang, that we are coming to deal with bread and butter issue, no more 3R. So, I mean, this is to set the background. But with this, maybe we'd like to hear from both of you. What do you think is the strategy that Perikatan will use and what Pakatan will use? Not Pakatan, sorry, Unity. Yeah, Pakatan plus Unity. So David, maybe we start with you first. What do you think they are doing and what do you think they should be doing? Okay.
They are doing, just before the recording, I just read through Malaysia Kini that we didn't have a press conference talking about we are not using 3R strategy anymore, which is matched with the rumors we have heard that Perikatan Nasional is changing the strategy from provoke the race and religion to talking about a bread and butter issue because the on the ground situation really worse and worse because as a fresh grad, taking a very like average salary, I can definitely feel the inflation and can definitely feel the cost of living become higher and higher. So I don't think that the people at Kelantan, Terengganu, Kedah won't feel that. They of course feeling that. And I can guarantee you, the menu rama is really attracting. Menu rama, ringgit to settle a lunch, although it's not that satisfied, but you can still stay alive by
it's
the
menu. It's satisfying to your wallet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very, you know, people relying on the subsidy is not baseless because people are really suffering. So I think they're changing the strategy to talking about bread and butter issue because it's a real issue. And as you can also point finger pointing to the government that you are not done, do your job. You are not dealing with the economic, and our economic minister Rafizi seems like don't know where he's going, and also Anwar in dealing with this inflation kind of things. To be fair, you cannot easily change the inflation rate within overnight. But people will say, during my era, it's like, if I'm waiting, during my era, although it's COVID, but our gas price is low. Although it's an emergency period, but our economy is not that bad. Although it's the Malaysia Prihatin kind of slogan. But compare with the current government to Muhyiddin, he can avoid to mention the Malaysia Prihatin era, but he can definitely play a role as a very, very good opposition to provoke the people that we as an opposition and yet to be the government, we want a government who has a better, who it's like, it's just pointing finger that you dealing Malaysia sucks. You cannot deal Malaysia with good governance like that. So it's like, they can play the economic cards in the urban area and still mobilize the grassroots Waka Umbi with the race card. That's it.
The three are in the more mid and rural seats, yeah, for example.
Or you talk about the kampung people inflation rate. What is inflation?
I mean, they just know money not enough.
Yeah, that's it.
But what about, okay, maybe Lara will come to you. What about the unity government then? What is your strategy, you think? And what do you think they will do? And what do you think they should be doing?
Well, I mean, just hearing what David was saying, it just reminds me of what, during the time before Princess Diana and had that very, very high profile divorce with now King Charles. So she went on a BBC show and that just sort of caused the whole thing blow up. But at that very time, I didn't realize that it was also the time when Prince Charles decided to hire a PR to help to improve the image of now himself, the Queen Consort Camilla. So I thought that was really, really clever. I think I felt like with the introduction of KJ into this whole PN, it almost seems like they are trying to reform the image, like it or not. Yes, maybe the whole message is still 3R, because if you look at how King Charles is today, I think he's still as progressive as he was back then.
Yeah,
there's no denying in that. And I just felt like it's almost like you're masking a certain issue so that because these are the issues that are really relevant to the people. And you just talk about, like, even earlier on, like Syed Saddiq was just talking about the Coldplay concert. How come Malaysia, there's only just one show, but in Singapore, four shows becoming six shows. That sort of things. And the economic disparity that we are seeing between Singapore and Malaysia. So with that sort of thing, I think it really, like, hits the mark. So I think they are trying to reform the whole image by getting KJ on board because he wants to be relevant. So he knows how to talk the language of the people. And especially if you're appealing to low information voters, this is all that they need to know. Like what you were saying, those rising middle class, all they want to know is, can I make a living? Can I get the increment that can match my inflation? That sort of thing. So I think to counter that with the expertise that Unity Government has, they need to do a much better job. I'm not saying that they should ramp out on their marketing, but they should really do a better job and really show the report card. I think the report card will matter more than anything else. It's like, from then, yes, despite that it's only just 7 months, this is what I've been doing, and that is what I've been doing. In fact, maybe inflation is coming up, but this is what we have been doing to actually cause the ringgit to hold and the ringgit to be remain relevant, and this is how we are helping the people. So I felt like they should really come up with a stats that shows the report card that shows this is what we have been doing, because these are demanded by the people. And I mean, as PH supporters, we are really wanting to see that sort of things that shows you say you are good. Show us your KPI. It's like our yearly annual review with the employer. So that sort of things, I think I would want to see it from them, and they should be really, really unapologetic about the reports. Be it good or bad, you show it, and then you show a milestone. Okay, look, we can't resolve inflation like what you say, but then within fortnight, that sort of things. Because obviously Malaysia's economy is very much linked to how US is performing right now. And with that sort of thing, and you have like New Zealand going to technical recession, Germany, I mean, worldwide is suffering that. So it's not an overnight like magic kind of like one you can just wipe it off. But there should be a concrete plan to show how you are increasing. And instead of just promoting things like tax the rich. Because, I mean, B40 will always be with you. So help the B40 first. I mean, you help the B40 and we can talk later on, I think. I felt like that's more than...
Remember previously, we were just kind of discussing among ourselves, like the whole income, you know, put into three major groups. It's very artificial because we are not talking about the net available money that you have. So I think one of the things Prime Minister was saying is that even Rafizi was saying there has to be a new reclassification of income. And I think that's a good step because if you want to deal with subsidy, I mean, it's like people come and check whether you have how many aircons in the house and things like that. They were doing that in Sarawak. I just think that's very ridiculous and not effective. But there should be something...
Exactly. I mean, my colleagues were just joking. I mean, how do you check if this person is entitled to subsidy for like RON 95? For instance, maybe the best way, like what we have been talking in the show, is to check if you are able to drive Ferrari. 5 Series.
I mean, there are so many different ideas, right? People are saying, look at the cars you buy. Maybe everyone has a set amount of quota. Because the thing is, if you live in Klang Valley, you have to drive a lot more than if you stay in Cebu or Belize.
Yeah.
So you can't... I mean, it's like so many of us who work here. I mean, my office is very near. I can even walk there. But a lot of people, it's 45 minutes one way.
Yep.
So these people, if you take away the subsidy, immediately you move them into the near poverty level. So there's no easy solution. But of course, if we look at Singapore, for example, how they implement GST is everyone will pay GST, but at a certain income level, you get waiver, you get rebate. But that requires good administration. So these are the bread and butter issue. But what do you think about the cultural fight, you know? Because it's like, are we so preoccupied with economy that, remember, Pakatan represents the multinational, multicultural society that we want, you know? Mm. And now I'm saying this because I have a concern that if we overly focus on economy, which is still the number one issue, we can lose sight of the multicultural thing, you know? Because it's like, okay, for the sake... Because that's really, you think about it, that's really the spirit behind NEP. We need to deal with poverty, and even though it's going to cause the multicultural to suffer, we don't care. Mm. But now we look at the impact. So I'm just a bit concerned about that. But what do you all think about? Because I just saw Anwar Ibrahim's interview about 40 Minutes with Al Jazeera just came out very recently. And he stressed so much on multicultural, multi-religion. And my friend who is very into politics say, look, Anwar can always say the right thing, but can he deliver? So what do you think about this? I mean, is this going to be something that is going to be discussed in state election? Is it even wise, you know, or do you think the unity government will be like, we just want to avoid this for now? What do you all think?
Well, I think like what we were talking earlier on during dinner, we were just saying that how the US founding fathers, they have that foresight even have that ceiling. Like, which country in the world that does that? Mm. So I felt like in a lot of ways, Anwar Ibrahim is prophetic. Mm. And he knows what it takes for the whole nation to go through a really thorough reform. Mm-hmm. And especially the fight of cultural war, I think it's more relevant than we like to think of it, because it just so happened that people are so caught up with all these economic issues that they fail to think so much. But I don't think that people are generally careless about this whole cultural war issue.
Mm. So they still care, but it's just like the
parity.
Stomach is matters more for now.
Yeah, for now. But you have also seen how Malaysians, they were able to really just come to that sort of unity because of that multiracial, multicultural relationship that they had, especially during the time when they had that slogan, Kita Jaga Kita. Mm. I think that sort of proved that actually Malaysians are much more capable of actually really just come out and defend it if they need to.
Yep.
But you need to really I guess the current leaders, they need to bring that war to right in front of your face to tell you that actually this is very important as well. That it's not just the bread and butter issue that we're trying to resolve, but there's also this sort of issue. Because if you talk about LGBTQ, and if you really just try to like ignore the green wave and really think, oh, well, they are doing a good job and things like that, talking about PN, you might really just be like welcoming the 3R issue into your backyard. Unknowingly or knowingly. So I felt like he has the foresight, but like what your friend is saying, can he deliver the job? So I would really want to see that sort of reform that is really coming from the government, that they have committees that are set up to do this sort of things, and you really engage people who really can be sympathetic towards, different kind of culture, like it or not. I mean, even just like our last episode, we were just talking about bakute. That sort of things is like soup tulang je. Like that sort of things, I mean, but you bring it to the table, people are just able to just discuss, debate healthily and agree to disagree. So that is what makes the whole Malaysian culture so unique and so beautiful, I think, the rainbow nation that we have.
Now, David, let me put it to you. In this state election, do you think it is a referendum on the unity government?
I think yes, because the time frame, the time gap is so near. We have two major elections within a year. So we cannot judge the government just by a few months, right? Yep. It's not fair to them. Although it's not the excuse for them to, we are just coming to the power within 1 year, we cannot perform. We need more time. You can say that it's a fact also, but you cannot use this excuse every time during the election. It's like, we just came into power a few months, give me more time to solidify all the things. So yeah, just now Lara mentioned the multinational, you mentioned the multinational, the rainbow nations, that I remember the time when Malaysian feel proud of Malaysia is when Mahathir era, like 1990s, every people see the progress, everyone see the our economy become better and better.
Yep.
And we have a Bangsa Malaysia concept. We have the Wawasan Tuapulo Tuapulo. Everything is good. And Barisan Nasional win beautifully in the election.
Yep.
So I think the economic growth and the national identity and within the race and the racial tension and or we say racial relationship is bound together. Yes, I agree with you that we cannot simply say we have to care economic and we avoid the identity kind of things, because everyone has the identity. We cannot say, I represent Ringgit Malaysia. If Ringgit Malaysia good, I'm good. Yes, someone might say that, but most of the people know. Someone will say, I'm proud as a Chinese. I'm proud as a Malay. I'm proud as a Muslim, Christian, whatever. Everyone have the identity. So you can say, this cannot fill your stomach. But this can. This can let you feel proud, let you feel the meaning of being a human.
Yep.
So it's very important also. So back to the topics I just now mentioned about the Mahathir era, it's like, I think this is progress at the same time. So if, let's say, Anwar perform well and international economy perform well and Malaysia suddenly become well, why not? So there's a saying about like, why Mahathir, that kind of Malaysia economy performed so well is because the manufacturing things turn to Malaysia, turn to ASEAN. And Malaysia have a very good common law, above average among the ASEAN countries.
Yep.
And people speak English. We have a very capable language skills. And it's like we are quite peaceful compared with Vietnam that time, Indonesia that time. So all the international manufacturing things just came to Malaysia. So our economic kick become bigger and bigger. Yeah. So everyone earning money. So why this manufacturing stuff turned to China? Because China joined the WTO in 2001. But now we have what? We have China and USA conflict in economy and politics. So we can see after COVID, many manufacturing or R&D things move to ASEAN again. Can we catch this chance, opportunity to revive again? I don't know. But when state election is just around the corner, we cannot simply say our GDP progress how many percent within few months, cannot. But I think if we see a long way, actually there's a pathway for Malaysia to make Malaysia great again. Because why not? We are kind of stuck into the situation of hope deferred for so long that Malaysia not hope already. We'll go to Singapore to work. And a fresh case like me, some of the people, some of my friends and colleagues actually work in Singapore and outstation or joining the international company because the salary is higher. But what if like you can earn a lot of money in Penang, in Sarawak, and Sabah if we have a larger economic cake? It's all linked together. But back to the state election point, I think the racial tension have to jaga also. But as well, I think Anwar, why we say we can, Anwar is not delivering because he's not putting the egg in the same basket for me. It's like he want to jaga the economic sector a bit and also confront the green wave a bit. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, now Wei Ding Yassin is announcing that Pekatan National will not using the 3R strategy. If they come into the combat of the economic debate, will be very interesting, which is very good that we want two major coalition in Malaysia in a competition of compete who is the better government or it's not that we don't want to see a two coalition fight for who is more conservative. So why not? If they can perform, Anwar have to catch up lah. But I don't think Perikatan now is doing the economic sector job very good. But if Perikatan National is talking about this issue in parliament or in Dun very frequent, Anwar have to answer.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you can't continue to have lack of result. But I think, you know, David, when you tie the economic prosperity to the reductions of racial, religious tension, I think you're spot on. There is the link there because when people are prosperous, they don't care about race and religion.
Maybe,
that much.
In some extent.
I think it's true. I mean, now that you think about it, it's like, of course, we knew all the bad things Mahathir did then, but people don't care because we have enough. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's a reality of the ground. And I think it's interesting that if Perikatan National come out and say we are going to focus on economy, I agree with you, they have nothing to show. I mean, look at Kelantan and Terengganu, terribly managed state. Then even the two version of Perikatan National, even with UMNO inside, it was hardly impressive. And I remember we did manifesto episode, one of our first video recording. And I mean, we just look at Perikatan manifesto, we're like laughing until want to roll on the floor because it's like so ridiculous. It's like so superficial. But yeah, I think in a way it's encouraging. Selangor and Penang represent the manufacturing area, and if the state government can really say, look, we are going to be able to attract a certain FDI in, we're going to make doing business easier, we're going to make foreign investment coming easier. I think Prime Minister was just talking about family office and, you know, people with wealth overseas can invest the money here to be managed by professional in Malaysia. I think Singapore has a limit of $20 million per family. Okay. And Malaysia is at least 5 to 6 years behind. So this kind of thing is like when you combine them together, all of a sudden you create the economy drift for the country.
Yeah.
I know we have covered quite a lot of things, but to end today's episode, and now you already have kind of covered some, but maybe you'd like to add on, is this, if today you are advisor to the government,
okay,
what would you say? I'm talking about the unity government here. So you can use federal context, you want to use Selangor context, or you want to use Sarawak context also can, whatever. But assuming you are an advisor, you know, in an area that you have passion, what would you say? I mean, in context of maybe state election. Maybe Lyra, you can go first. State
election. Well, interesting.
Yeah. State election.
Yeah, actually, I think I'm just thinking about the whole recent, the Tesla recruitment. I mean, it's so interesting because you have it in Selangor itself. But I mean, of course, the position is very, very little that you have so many people walk in for that competition. But I felt like it's really the start of something. I mean, if it's me, of course, yes, while we are focusing on the economic, I mean, I would really want to tell the government that you should really start bringing in, like, look into how do you lower down the threshold for foreign investment.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a lot of competition here. I mean, there's a lot of talks about businesses moving to Indonesia. So why not compete with your nearest neighboring country, which has a lot of resources just as Malaysia has. Yep. So I felt like Malaysia should really showcase her resources and really make herself relevant again in the national, in the global platform.
Yep.
And we also could have like those really workable move away from subsidy. I think I felt like subsidy will really actually help people to grow. But you can't just take away everything in one night.
Yep.
That really the whole country, the economy, I think it will collapse. But really develop and having that sort of systematic way how you are actually, it's not like the top 20 are being sidelined. I felt like the top 20 you should be incentivized to really work harder, more. I mean, because that's how you grow the whole economy. But you also help this B40, even the middle group, to really just rise up to a whole new level. But that starts with really trying to move away from subsidy. But and Malaysia is such rich country in, especially in petroleum. So I felt like there should be that sort of really a sound advice how we could actually really improve in terms of the, like, make ourselves really, like, being able to compete, and especially being a great oil exporter, you can also have some oil reserve for the country, the hydro energy, all those sort of things. I think it's really able to put it, and if you could have, like, different states competing for, like, what this state is, like Sarawak, having Bakun Dam, you can have it, like, really just generating affordable energy to the whole country. I think that will really help in terms of boosting the economy from the east to the west, but also having the west to help to build the infrastructure in Sarawak at a much affordable rate. So I felt like there should be that sort of synergy that I really want to come see from the government, because you talk about, yes, you have DPM from Sarawak, but I would want to see more synergy rather than, yes, I mean, of course, we are all for decentralization, but I felt like there should be that federal leverage that you are playing to your advantage by having that sort of synergy between different states. Each state should come to the table and say, this is what we can bring to the table. And collectively, we could actually help the whole economy blossom. And this is actually what we might need from other states. And then the other state come in to help. So I felt like there should be that healthy, like, exporting of resources, be it manpower or different kind of natural resources between the states to actually help each other to blossom. And who knows? I mean, our GDP might just grow and we could really just tide through the whole inflation wave. Yeah.
Wow. Interesting point.
Yeah, very interesting. So I think I separate in 2 points. One point is economic growth and another point is identity. What to say? Build a new identity for Malaysian. It's like new Malaysian. I think I address the first point first, that economic growth. So I agree with that. Everyone knows that Malaysia resource we just so centralized in Klang Valley. So Klang Valley have 8 million of population, which is a quarter of Malaysian populations and all the resource here. Actually, Malaysia have the potential, let's say we have 4 Kuala Lumpur's in Penang. Let's say Cebu can be a Kuala Lumpur, like KK can be a Kuala Lumpur, but why we just have one Kuala Lumpur? Because over centralized. But to be fair, if I'm a federal government, I want to invest in KL first because it is there geographically correct.
Yep.
Also, why I want to invest in Cebu and in Kuching? There's no deep sea port and like Penang so far away. So in economic sense, that centralized is a very natural kind of things. But I think after so many years of centralization in Klang Valley, I don't think other cities got zero potential. Like Penang have a very fantastic R&D industry. And I heard the fresh grad salary come to 4,000 a month, which is very kind of promising in Malaysia. Our Johor Bahru want to become a potential art and entertainment hub, but fail. But I think we might try again.
Yeah.
And also Sabah Sarawak is a very multicultural, and I believe it's a very potential place for our art and entertainment. It's very unique among the world. So why don't we separate all the investment to all the places in Malaysia? Don't just centralize the resources in Klang Valley. So the thing is, we have to decentralize the resources, not only economically and also the politically. So why is like just how Lyra mentioned that our DPM comes from Sarawak, so what? Why don't we have more economic autonomy to jaga? Of course, it's better comes with a very good check and balance.
Yeah.
In Sabah also, because of corruption everywhere in Sabah and Sabah. But why don't we choose to think about that? It's like if we have four cities have the GDP like Klang Valley, it's very promising for Malaysia.
Yeah.
So why don't we? This is for a long term kind of promise. No hope for federal government. But for state elections, just as I mentioned, if I'm the advisor for state for the government, federal government, we have to get through pass the test of state government first. So of course we have to prepare all the economic things and nation building things beforehand, but we have to get through this political test or else there's nothing to say. So back to the identity building, I think Malaysia come to an era that we even need to progress from the Bangsa Malaysia kind of identity, because Bangsa Malaysia kind of identity is rooted by Mahathir and also kind of unknown dominated government. But this time a new identity is more inclusive also in geographical way, that Sabah and Sarawak is finally kind of included. I don't mind, but maybe some will accuse that Sabah Sarawak is still the third or second class citizen in Malaysia, but it's a progress, right? So since our federal government now is the weakest point in dominate whole federal government, so it's better chance for each political party to nego. So in this point of view, why not we, just now you mentioned we chikita chaka kita. Actually we are not that fragile, right? Our racial tension is not that fragile. We help each other. I don't want to see you die. Even you don't believe the same God as me, but I don't want to see you die. It's very, you know, sometimes I'm really touched by this kind of situation because we are not really mentioned by the politician that I don't want you, you don't want me, you anti me or I anti you.
Yep.
Somehow we can come together. So if we broaden our view to compare ourselves with every nation in Malaysia, in the world, actually we are very progressed in this kind of racial harmony. And this is very, very rare, not only in the world and also in the history. Why don't we build our new identity together that we can, although, yes, Islam is the official religion, then what's the big deal? We still can easily have express our belief. Why? I think this is the potential of Malaysia as a federation as well as a nation that can champ out everything together, but we still can progress together. That's it.
Yeah, I think one politician mentioned before from West Malaysia actually, and say, look, one day for us to have, you know, what you were saying about a new identity in terms of, because remember we were just saying that for the longest time, the political operators have relied on siege mentality. You know, they kind of cause people to feel like we have to fight, and that's how they get their vote. But if we can kind of take that away, because I mean, you take these factors away, people are actually pretty harmonious, right? I think that's what Malaysians are very proud of, that we are, you know, when it comes to certain events, when it comes to supporting a common cause and things like that, we are quite harmonious from that point of view. But from time to time, because the siege mentality is so imprinted, it's just so easy to trigger. And this politician was just saying that, look, when we kind of involve the East Malaysian nations, that's where we can start to decentralize, and we kind of go back to the goal of 1963, you know, like how the late Lee Kuan Yew was saying, Malaysia for all Malaysians. Mm. And why should that even be controversial, you know? And I just remember Anwar Ibrahim was saying in the interview that I'm a practicing Muslim, and why should that be a problem to you or me? And so he's saying all the right things, but you know, how do we move forward? So it's very, very interesting. And you know, I hope, you know, people are listening to this, and you know, Lyra and David can be your policy developer, you know. And for me, it's like one of the things I've been looking around. Recently, I have so many clients, you know, that in China doing well, but you know, at the back of the political turmoil there, they are thinking of a plan B, and they are like, "Hey, it's not that we don't like China. China is very good, but we need to think of a plan B." And a lot of them think Malaysia is a plan B, and even China think Malaysia is a plan B because of the language and things. I tell you, most businessmen prefer to work here. This is a reality of the business, and I feel like our government must leverage on that, and must make it easy, and must make it easier to give certain work permit to people. I know this sounds very controversial because it's like, are you taking... No, these people are not coming to compete jobs with you. In fact, they can provide more jobs to people. Yep. And so there will be... So recently, I think Malaysia Second Home, they have kind of make the policy a bit... But Malaysia Second Home, not for ongoing... professional, it's more for retiring. But ongoing one, I think we should make it easier. Otherwise, where is the money coming from?
Yeah.
But anyway, when it comes to all this policy, I think we have much, much, much more to say. But we want to save that for a further episode, you know, when we talk more about the dynamics of East and West. And maybe when campaigns start, I think the next time we do recording, state election campaign will be kicking already.
Yeah.
And I think we can get David to come back again. Let's talk about some development. And I don't know. I mean, it's like we talk about all the things that might happen, but we could still be surprised, right?
Yep.
We could still be surprised. You know, later on, KJ suddenly decided to run. I don't know. Who knows? You know, then the claw schedule will really be schedule already. Yep. All right, so I think that's all the time we have for today. So very nice to have you here. We're just saying, you know, every time we come here, it becomes a political junkie episode. But it's okay. I hope that, you know, all the viewers and listeners, you do enjoy, and maybe we can do a bit of indexing, right? So people can just find a topic they like. So once again, David Tian, Lyra. So until next time.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.